Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We're here in the KHOI studios around our kitchen table, going to be talking about all kinds of good things to eat. This is a volunteer-based radio station. We get by with your goodwill, your good memberships,
and our sense of humor.
We do that, too. And we get by with support from a lot of fine folks. Here's one of them.
Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames, community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
Hope everyone enjoyed their fill of heat and humidity this week. Now it is a beautiful day today. What a difference a cool north breeze can make. I did some heavy-duty summer porch sitting on Sunday. Enjoyed that cool breeze. Donna, what did you do this weekend?
Well, I bought a mosquito zapper and put it on the front porch so I could sit on the front porch without frantic scratching.
Sounds like a good idea.
It's been wet this year.
Yeah. Wet, cold. Things change. That's what we love about Iowa. Also, this past weekend, there was a dandy farmer's market and lots of warm weather, summer things going on. Also, presidential candidates are popping up in central Iowa, and they seem to be ripening their campaign rhetoric.
It's a bumper crop this year.
It's a bumper crop, my goodness. And I won't even mention about being overripe or perhaps turning into something else, but things were exciting here for a bit. It's all over the internet. It's all over the news. So keep your eye to those huge crop of candidates. They came to Iowa. They were here in Ames on Saturday. I thought they'd come and walk down Main Street and shake some hands, but I didn't see any of them up close. I just assumed
I didn't even
they were
know
there.
They're here till I saw it in the paper.
There you go.
They kind of slipped in and slipped out. It's a slippery group.
Well, there's other things that are ripe for the picking this time of year. Melons and sweet corn are coming on. We'll talk about melons and summer salads this week. It's time to enjoy the summer bounty. But first, here's a short report from the Onion Creek Farm Tooth and Claw Department. I had a close encounter of the coyote and chicken kind on Onion Creek Farm. Oh, my goodness. Middle of the week, I think it was Wednesday. It was warm. I was in the house, and chickens will let you know that something is wrong. But this wasn't a chicken noise that I was used to at all.
Was it the egg-laying noise?
No, it wasn't the egg-laying. And it wasn't the hawk noise, which is a whole different thing. It wasn't the something is really bad, something is dying noise. Those are the three. I know those noises. And this was in the middle of the day, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Went out and looked once. Nothing going on. What is wrong? Everybody kept clocking and clocking and clocking. And about 10 minutes later, they had not given up. I go out about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, stand on the west side of my little chicken run, look over to the east side of my little chicken run. All the chickens are facing east, clacking and clacking up a noise. And on the other side of the fence, kind of in the woods, on the east, along the east fence line, there was a coyote.
Wily coyote.
Wily. He's sitting there, he or she, not a very big one, kind of a fuzzy-looking thing. It was a coyote. It was not a dog. It was a coyote, because I've seen them before. And it was sitting there just calmly looking the chickens back, kind of like it was window shopping.
Just waiting for an opportune moment. Right? Trying to figure out how to get one of these
now,
little ladies.
And I can understand that the coyote is probably a little tired of eating rabbits by this time of year. Bless the coyotes for eating the rabbits. But we made a big noise. The coyote ran off. I didn't have a chance to do anything more than just scare it off.
I think, Lana, this is part of your old dog syndrome. You know, when the coyotes start showing up, it's because Buster is getting too old.
That's true. My poor deaf dog was just sleeping in the shade by the porch. So I had to listen for what's the problem. So that's the Tooth and Claw Department report for this week. Watch out for those coyotes in your chickens. Okay. What is ripe this year? What are you eating?
Summertime.
Yes.
This is it. Okay, I have to announce that I am thrilled to say this is going to be a great year for melons. We haven't really, I mean, we've had melons, of course, every year, but they don't reach that perfection of sweetness. And these, I brought in for us to lick into the microphone and slurp some musk melons. Ooh, and they are so fragrant that my whole kitchen, when I buy them and take them home, the whole kitchen smells like that. That's when you have a good melon year. These musk melons, this variety is a muscatine melon, which I'm assuming means that it was bred to be raised in Muscatine, which is our finest melon growing area, probably because of the sandy soil. Although these were grown closer to Ames, it is that variety. And they are butterscotch, candy sweet. Have a little slurp here.
I will.
Make some good radio noises because you guys can't smell them. You can't taste them.
They're moist. They're wonderful.
Oh, they're just so juicy. What do you think, Rick?
Great.
Heads up from Rick the engineer. Oh, they are just so good. So, of course, I've been eating them just every which way. Plain is fine with me. Now, I grew up eating salt on my cantaloupe. Did you do that when you were a child?
No, for goodness sakes. I wouldn't put salt on them. That's how we're different.
This must be an Illinois thing, I guess. We always had salt on the cantaloupe. I also like to do the Mexican way of eating these nice orange melons is lime, salt, and a little hot chili.
Oh, now that would be good.
That's good too.
I've had that in a salad. Yes. Mm-hmm. The lime and salt. In a salad, I could see doing that.
Or even salt and black pepper.
Oh.
I mean, there's no bad way to eat these.
Okay, so there's cantaloupe and there's melons. And some of these wonderful fruit, are they fruits or vegetables?
I think they're fruit.
Okay. Some of them have a real veiny-looking skin, and others are very, and we see those most around here.
Right.
But
the
veiny-looking
ones are supposedly technically musk melon.
Okay.
Whereas the more smooth-skinned, or at least where the netting around them is finer, is supposed to be a cantaloupe. And then there are, I don't see them too much here, but there's some wonderful French varieties, too, that are sweeter and more butterscotchy and usually smaller. And some of the orange ones even has Charente.
Oh, yes.
Is the French breakfast melon that is actually greenish on the outside, but orange and butterscotchy like our cantaloupes. And those are wonderful. So I don't know if anybody's going to be growing them this year, but boy, if they are, grab them because this should be a good year.
I have seen those in the past sold at farmers market called a French breakfast.
Small,
right. and actually kind of lobed. They're sweet little things.
Tiny.
Yeah.
But, I mean, our musk melons are just fabulous. So, you know, eat while the eating's good. They make wonderful salads. I was reading, what was it? It was a recipe with cucumber, musk melon, and I think basil, mint, probably salt, pepper. Toss it with you could put a little olive oil on it. Not too much. You don't need much. You could put a tiny bit of vinegar if you want. And then they said it was really great to put goat cheese with it.
Oh.
And now there are a lot of watermelon and goat cheese recipes. And I think our watermelons are going to be good. They're just not here yet. But go out and get your cantaloupe musk melons now.
Oh, my, yes. I always look forward to watermelon. I'm a real watermelon kind of girl, so I do look forward.
Well, I've been buying the non-local ones. Actually, did I tell you about my watermelon kombucha combo?
Oh, no, that's not now.
We've been making kombucha regularly, Lana and I, and we've talked about that. But what I've been doing when it is ready, I mix it in the blender about half watermelon cut up, seedless, and half kombucha, and just whip it up and keep a big old jar in the fridge. You have to stir it because it does settle out. But watermelon and kombucha has been a big hit at my house this year.
Ooh, good, good. Yeah. That's a good idea to do with a melon, especially, well, I eat a lot of melon, but there's always some left over. So
it's Yeah, especially with watermelon. Actually, maybe I'll make an experiment. I'm thinking cantaloupe, kombucha, and a little ginger, maybe.
Oh, now see.
Well, I'll let you know how that goes.
A good summer thing.
Yeah, I mean, just get creative with this cantaloupe because they are so good. Make them every which way until you're just sick of them because we don't get these every year like
this. No. It's like good tomato season or a good strawberry season.
Speaking of tomato season, we're starting to get a few at certain markets of the local outdoor grown, not hothouse. I mean, the hothouse ones have been what we've been getting, or hoop house, because it's a late year with the kind of chill that we've had.
Cool spring.
So now that we've got some weather, the warmth will hit the tomatoes. But I have to say, I bought some tomatoes, and I was shocked. And this was not at a store. It was at a local outdoor vendor. $3.50 a pound. Holy gamoly. Woo!
Well, it takes a lot.
What do you think about that price?
Oh, it takes a lot to get a tomato to you. So I think that would encourage lots of people to maybe next year plant more in their window box.
I was thinking the same thing. I mean, $2.50 always seems acceptably, but $3.50 just seemed. I mean, I don't want to begrudge the farmers the money, but wow.
Of course, the first good ripe tomatoes you can ask more. So.
Well, I guess that's what's going on, and I paid it. But
we'll see. Yeah. I'm having a little bit of ripening happen, but again,
yours are late too.
Yeah, very much. Mm-hmm. I've got a few cherries coming, and I talk to the tomatoes every
cherry
day.
Cherry tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. But I talk to them, and there they are. I want to go back to watermelons here. I don't know in your family or in your family history. Do you ever make watermelon pickles?
Is that with the rind?
With the rind.
Well, supposedly the rind has some nutrient that's particularly good and hard to find. It's citrulline or something. I'm saying this improperly. I don't know. But yeah, they're supposed to be good for you.
Oh, I knew they were good for you. I love watermelon pickles.
Now,
I made them.
Is that a, you have to cook them? Or
I've made them in the past. It's a real fuss. You have to go through a maceration, soaking process, cook them a little bit, let them sit some more. You have to peel off the green part. But
you mean
the outside green, the tough green part.
Make the kombucha one in the blender, mm-hmm. I try to leave some of the soft green part on it to go into it.
Mm-hmm. So I have made them in the past, and the recipe I use is from The Joy of Cooking. And it's the one that
it's an old.
Yeah, my mother and grandmother made watermelon pickles, and I thought about that. And
it's watermelon rind.
Watermelon rind pickles. So I think if you pickle just the watermelon yourself.
Yeah,
it's
you would just get mush.
Mush. Yeah. But they end up being nice and crispy, and they are a great thing to put on a plate.
Are you going to do it this year?
I just might.
Oh, well, we want a sample if you do.
Yeah, I'll bring them in. I'm kind of proud of my watermelon pickles. Oh. I like that.
And how'd you flavor them?
Oh, I like that taste. It has, what is it now? I see, I don't have my Joy Cooking book with me. It's
is it a savory?
It's an anise.
It's like fennel?
No.
Anise seed.
Yeah. It has that kind of.
Oh.
Yeah, kind of.
Oh. Okay, so more in the spice direction.
Yes, yeah. I was thinking of it going with fall meals because you have to pick them for a while.
Oh, you put clove in it,
yes,
too?
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Okay,
it's
okay,
that
way.
It's that kind of thing.
Right,
yeah.
Like and spiced peaches.
Yes, yes. I'll give watermelon pickles a try.
You know,
again.
Another thing that I've had, and this is with the cantaloupe or the muskmelon, is my friend Rayanne Hansen does this in the dehydrator, which you're very good at. Also, you make the slices really thin, and you brush them with just a little honey water, and then you dehydrate them, and it is like candy. It is delicious.
And now That's watermelon, not
No, cantaloupe.
Oh, cantaloupe.
Cantaloupe or muskmelon. So you get this butterscotchy, you know, preserved thing that you can just put in a bag and eat in January, you know, when you're feeling desolate.
So do we have ideas on what to do with this melon harvest that we're going to move into?
I'm very excited about
the
melon,
that sounds
as you
like
can
tell. Oh, that's a wonderful idea. We've got pickles. We've got brushed and dried. What would you call that? Cantaloupe candy almost.
Yeah, dehydrated cantaloupe.
And do eat it raw and do eat it in salads. And,
smoothies.
And your idea with melons, watermelon mixed with kombucha sounds really, really good.
Yeah, that's just flat out the kombucha and the watermelon, nothing else.
Oh,
and
good.
I'm going to try a little cantaloupe, and I'll let you know next week.
Oh.
I got a new batch of kombucha I can mix with the cantaloupe. So.
Oh, very good.
So have at it with the cantaloupe, folks. It is top-notch this year. I think we're in for and this is just the beginning of the season. So
celebrate. I'm looking for – and I – three cheers to all those farmers out there that grow what I refer to as the bulky vegetables. There's a lot of work to move all those heavy things around. I'm thinking of filling up the back of a pickup with those, and my back just hurts. So I'll buy them from somebody else. Thank you, farmers, that do such a wonderful job of doing melons and cantaloupe.
Well, speaking
this time
of big and bulky, did you talk about your garlic harvest yet? I am loving your garlic.
Had some, yeah. Okay.
I did. They are the biggest, juiciest, you know, it's a good year for garlic, too.
And I have no idea what we did, so don't ask us, but we just have
to. It's something to do with the weather, I think so.
I hope everybody had a good garlic.
Because you do the same variety in the same ground every year, so the only variable is the weather, right?
Right. Okay. I don't know. Maybe I sang to them or something, but good.
Well, keep it up, whatever it was,
good garlic harvest this year.
Maybe it's that coyote sniffing around
or
something.
Oh, that's probably it.
Who knows? Who knows?
Okay. Well, I've got a – moving from the – sublime to the slightly ridiculous here. I've got a book report, a book review. I would just like to mention I'm a great book reader, and here's a great summer read. It's called Holy Cow by David Duchovny. David Duchovny, I didn't know it at all.
Of the X-Files.
Okay, see, I opened up this back to the author picture, and Donna says, oh, of course, that's a guy that she used to know or something or
rather. Yeah, he was a neighbor of a good friend. Not that I didn't know who he was either, and they told me, so.
Okay, there he is. He is
he was a Malibu resident at the time.
He's a beloved television, stage, and screen actor, as well as a screenwriter and director. He came out with this book called Holy Cow. And Holy Cow is just a wonderful romp. It's a tale of the barnyard and beyond. It's the story. It's very much like the tale of Babe the Pig, except this is about Elsie the cow. And it's fun. It's a parable. It's great. Elsie and her other barnyard animals break out of the barnyard, go off on adventures, have a wonderful time. And they all have very human qualities. And it's just a real fun romp. Elsie the cow has dreams of ending up in Mumbai because in India they don't eat cows. And her friend the pig ends up in Israel because they don't eat pigs there. And they have to get another animal in this mix, and that animal ends up being a turkey. And that's only because the turkey's the only one that can use a cell phone. So that's how things work. And this is a really fun. And at the end of the book where the author is thanking everybody, including his copy editor and everybody and his family and his dog. And he also thanks Disney and Pixar for turning down the first idea that he pitched. He wanted to turn it into an animated film, but they turned him down. And he said, that's good because it forced me to write out a book like a big boy. And it's a real fun book to read. So that's Holy Cow by David Duchovny. It's about food, it's about barnyard animals, and all sorts of things. There you go. Holy Cow.
Well, I have a little David Duchovny story. He's married to Tia Leone, the actress, and here's what she did that I always thought was a good idea. For her Thanksgiving turkey, she would go to another young lady that I know in Los Angeles who's well known for making tamales, Tamara's tamales. And get a bunch of tamales and use that to stuff her Thanksgiving turkey And it was a great, great idea.
So you heard it here first. Put that in your idea cap for long about Thanksgiving. So we talked about the turkey in the Holy Cow book, and we talked about turkey for Thanksgiving and all sorts of things. You're listening to KHOI. Support this station. Visit our website, khoifm.org. That takes you to the station website, and look for the Donna Lana Kitchen page there. The Madeline recipe that Donna talked about last time is
those
on
are,
the...
Those are the little French cookies.
Little French cookies. It's on the recipe page now, and there's all sorts of fun stuff there. And swirl around and find some other fine things, too. There's a lot of whole good stuff on this radio station. We will listen to a little music here. This one is called Richard Bremen's and Bush on the Hill by Mick Maloney. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. There were some big sellers at the farmer's market this Saturday. It was a warm, warm day, but somehow fresh dill and mint and basil and parsley, boy, they went really fast. People must be in a summer salad mood. Do you have any words of wisdom about summer salads, Donna?
Well, you know, this is the time of year when the food is almost perfect just by itself. So you don't want to get too fussy with the really, like, you know, like with the cantaloupe we're talking about. If you get too fussy, you'll cover that depth of flavor. Or, like, for example, you know, so you just stick to the classics. Potatoes are coming in now, the new potatoes. So with potato salads, you can get really creative in putting just these nice herbs in it, like Take your potato salads can be anything. You've got potatoes, any kind of potato you want, including sweet potatoes and yams. You need an oil, a vinegar, and then whatever you want to flavor it with. So you can just, as long as you have those things, like the oils can be olive oil, they can be mayonnaise, they can even be sour cream, you know, any of those varieties. And then whatever acid you want, it's usually vinegar, or if it's mayonnaise, it's already got the vinegar in it, or even, you know, some potato salads are good with a little lemon in them. But, you know, the choice is yours, and get creative. And then as many herbs as you want, or vegetables.
Yeah. I have a potato salad question. I tend to leave the skin on my potatoes.
Me too.
But
color. Vitamins.
Yes, color.
Roughage.
Toothage. Okay. Mm-hmm. Getting the potatoes just the right amount of doneness. Do you cook potatoes in a hole or in big chunks and cut them up later, or do you cut them up into small chunks?
You know, I think people tend to do it the way their mother did
it. Yes.
But the options are, of course, roasting.
Oh, fun.
Steaming. And the other question is, whole and then cut it up?
Yes.
Or cut it up and then roast it? I personally find, there's two reasons I usually cook them whole. One is they're easier to cut once they're cooked. And the other reason is I think you get a more uniform consistency, because if you're roasting or steaming them in pieces, you know, unless you're a machine and a perfectionist, you're going to have irregular piece sizes. And also, depending on where they are, either in the sheet pan, unless they're single layered, or even if they're steamed, where they are in the pot, you'll get some uneven cooking. So personally, I like to either roast them in the oven and chop them up afterwards after they've cooled, or even steam them whole or quartered or something like that, and then cut them further after that. But, you know, you could, there's, as my mother would say, a lot of ways to skin the cat.
Or skin a potato.
Exactly.
I'll have to try that. I cut mine up into little bits, and I agree. They get, some are hard and some are soft.
Yeah,
I'm going to try them whole.
Overcook really fast, which can be a problem, because then you end up with kind of mashed potato salad.
Yeah.
And I also think it's a good idea to put, like, your onions are in now. You can put them in raw. And a nice thing to do with raw onions to take a little sting out of them is to set them in vinegar.
Oh, I've never done that.
Like last night I made a cucumber salad. So I think it was cucumbers, whole Greek yogurt. I chopped in mint. I chopped in basil, salt, and pepper. And then I chopped up some of your little tiny onions that I got this weekend and put them in some, what vinegar was it? I think it was a golden balsamic, because I didn't want a dark vinegar in it. And I let them sit in the vinegar for, 10 minutes or so.
Is that all? Yeah.
And it doesn't take long, but it kind of, the vinegar sort of cooks the onions a little bit, you know, in that pickly sense. Mm-hmm. And then I just dumped the whole thing in the salad and stirred it up. That was a really easy cucumber. The cucumbers are quite good now.
Oh, yes. That's a good idea to kind of get your onions kind of prepared for the salad.
Yeah, it takes that bite out of them. Or lots of times I'll do them in a large dice and give them a little sauté. You don't want to cook them down till they're soppy, but you can take the heat out that way, and then be sure to get all of the good oil that you've sautéed them in into the salad.
Good.
And this works with potato salad, or even if you're making a bean salad, like green beans, or a three bean salad, cooling, and you want onions, either using them raw with the vinegared a little bit first, or kind of lightly cooking them just enough to wilt them.
Oh, I like
really
that
yummy.
Idea of kind of preparing your onions, especially for the three bean salad.
You could cook your bacon and then sauté the onions in the bacon fat, too.
To put in potato salad. Or
salad, any kind of salad for that matter.
Oh, now, I am getting these are good summer foods. In one of our past shows, you were talking about how to make homemade mayonnaise. And you had some great tips, and you were going along, bragging about the fact that you always have really good luck with mayonnaise. That never breaks apart. But what is the trick for if your mayonnaise breaks apart?
A little on the chemistry to kind of make sure I knew what I was talking about. And people recommend – well, first of all, I found out why I have such good luck with mayonnaise is I always whip it by hand. I use a whisk and I whip it by hand because it's so easy to do, you know, whereas if you use either a blender or a food processor or a mixer, you know, you're not making – unless you're making gallons of it for some big, you know, institutional kind of party. But if you're just making, you know, a normal dinner table amount or even several cups, whipping it by hand is so easy, and you don't have to clean up all the equipment afterwards. It's just a whisk. So it turns out that if you're whisking by hand, you're not overheating it and it is less likely to break.
Oh, very good. Kind of back up and give us the just quick how you make it.
An egg yolk, a dab of mustard, some lemon juice. Now, I like my mayonnaise a little lemony, so that's also adds more liquid to it, which also helps it from breaking. And I was reading, although I haven't tried this, but I probably will, that perhaps a teaspoon of water at that point.
With the egg yolk.
Yes, with the egg yolk. So, and you can put in some salt and pepper there. So you mix those things in the bottom of, I just use my you know, metal mixing bowls, which is what I use all the time because they're lightweight and they never break. Stainless steel bowls and a whisk. A balloon whisk is nice, or any kind of handheld whisk. And you mix those up really well, and then you start pouring in. I'm an olive oil fan, although other people use, you know, peanut oil, canola, if you want it slightly lighter. But I like to go for the gusto of a fruity olive oil. So you pour the olive oil in a thin stream and just keep whisking as you go. And I think, as I said on the last time we talked about it, my father's son is French. And so he's really, like, he holds his breath while he does it because he doesn't want to breathe on the mayonnaise and change the temperature. I don't hold my breath and it still doesn't break. But should your mayonnaise break, and that means it starts to, like, not emulsify and you're just getting runny olive oil and clumps of, you know, it's not right, you just calm down, put your whisk down, break another egg, and put the yolk in and start over again. And then it will emulsify.
Oh, so keep calm and carry on
exactly,
with your mayonnaise.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, the other thing we've talked about before as a flavoring ingredient is compounded butters. So I like to take all this kind of, you know, all the corn we're getting and all these salads and, you know, you're using such wonderful fresh seasonal ingredients. So to change the flavors up, I either flavor the butter for the corn. Like last night I did curry and garlic butter for the corn. It was fabulous. That is called a compounded butter. You can compound your butter with herbs if you like, or spices, and like a basil butter or a basil pepper butter or a lemon basil butter or tarragon butter, which is also really good on chicken, by the way. Roast chicken with tarragon, and just baste it with a little, stuff some tarragon in the cavity of the chicken when you roast it, but also maybe stuff a little under the skin and then baste it with tarragon butter, and it is really, really supreme. You can also serve that with a little tiny bit of lemon juice squeezed over the chicken, too. Tarragon and lemon are wonderful.
Good.
So making compounded butters or flavored mayonnaises. I got into looking up anchovy-flavored mayonnaise, dill pickle flavored mayonnaise, which I think would be kind of like a tartar sauce, basically. Or, you know, just flavoring your mayonnaises. You could do herbs, too, of course.
Mm-hmm. And also, you can do little bits, little dibs and dabs, and then you're ready for your sandwiches in the summertime.
Oh, sandwiches.
Sandwiches.
Sandwiches, that's a whole other thing. It's BLT time.
Oh, who invented bacon, lettuce, and tomatoes?
I don't know, but
I like that
the
person.
Most divine combination. So, an herbed mayonnaise on your BLT would be fabulous these days. And just any kind of, you know, cheese, mayonnaise, and fresh tomatoes, and some arugula, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any of these garden fresh combinations, just, you know, with some flavored mayonnaise or
mustards.
Yes, flavored mustard.
One thing that is just handy to have.
Oh, you mean mustard greens?
Mustard greens.
On the sandwich, yeah.
Another thing that's handy for sandwiches, and you can't really get this unless you special order things. I mean, it's not the sort of thing that people take to farmer's market by the bushel. But if you have a nasturtium plant out there, go ahead and pick the nasturtium leaves or even the flowers. It's a nice radishy, wonderful taste.
It's nice and spicy, and it's lovely on sandwiches. It's true. I mean, these are all good things to do for hot weather. Like, when it was really hot, I did not want to turn the oven on.
Right. And this stuff just is growing out there, ready to eat. And the nasturtium leaves can be pretty big. They can be almost as big as your sandwich anyway. So you don't have to worry about getting too many. One or two leaves kind of just do enough, and then you have your pretty plant left.
Oh, another hot weather thing that I did when it was, and we will get this hot weather again, I'm sure. I took my crock pot and put it out on the back porch and plugged it in, so the heat stayed outside instead of heating up the kitchen, and I kind of slow steamed a chicken that way.
That's a great idea. Put the heat outside. People used to have summer kitchens.
Yes.
For canning. Oh, yes. Why did they do that? Because it's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, yes. Keeps the heat out of the house.
Yes. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're sitting here around the kitchen table just kind of coming up with summer food.
Yes, and gloating in the lusciousness of this summer weather.
Mm. Yeah. And although we don't have a way that we can get the smell of things across the microphones here. The studio smells like
cantaloupe. Or actually, muskmelon.
Muskmelon. Where it's just really nice this time of year. So, you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Support this fine radio station and contact us with your ideas. Are we meeting your needs as far as a food program is concerned? We'd like to know what's on your plate. Email us at khoi@gmail.com or contact this radio station. Let us know what you think. We'll go to another bit of music here. This one is called The Boogie Reel and The Controversial Reel. Thank you.
Okay, we're back to the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. And Lana had talked about a book called, what was it called, Holy Cow?
Yeah.
And in it, the story is the cow, one of the cows went to India where they don't eat cows, which reminded me this week, I've been seeing some little short films. They're, I think, 9 minutes long or something. And there was one called The Kerala Cowboy. And I think it's Kerala.
Kerala.
Is a, it's in southern, it's a region in southern India. And this little film was about a retired school teacher who was preserving and giving a lovely life to varieties of cow, breeds of cows in India, particularly ones that are becoming rare and endangered. And the video said that he was talking about that there used to be 119 varieties of breeds of cattle in India, and now there's only 30-some or something like this. And these little films, the films come from something called the Source Project, which is, let me read this from their website. The Source Project is a self-funded venture looking to create media that positively connect and communicate some of the most important issues being faced by our environment and as a result of our societies and cultures. It says we need to begin to understand the environment as well as the issues before we're able to move towards the numerous and sustainable solutions. So if you Google the source film or the Source Project, and you'll get on their website, and they have a bunch of short videos all dealing with food issues globally. And they're, A, beautifully filmed, and they really talk about the issues. So this particular issue of the Kerala Cowboy was talking about kind of vanishing domestic species of animals. And he talks about how one of the reasons in India that they're vanishing is because they're going towards cows that have higher production. But he said, if you go over the lifetime of the cow, actually the older varieties who can milk longer end up producing more milk in the long term than, like, the big probably Holsteins that they're bringing in or whatever that variety is that the breed that they're promoting. And then he talks about how he lets the cows wander around his sort of jungle and they kind of self-feed. And he said, and they eat wide varieties of herbs. And then he says that that goes, the values of those herbs, as we know, and whatever the cows eat, goes into the milk. So he was talking about his milk as medicine. And it's a lovely little film. So go to thesourcefilm.org, or I just Googled The Source Project. And there's a bunch of different kind of short agricultural, very interesting and very educational films. I highly recommend The Kerala Cowboy.
Oh, good. Let's find out about cows around the world. That's good.
I want one. He has these little cows.
Little cows?
Yeah, like the size of sheep, kind of.
Oh.
And I actually had seen one in France a couple of years ago, an old breed that a farmer had. They were, I think the head of the cow maybe came up to my shoulder.
Okay.
Oh, they're small enough I could keep one in the backyard.
And you probably would, too.
Oh, I wish I could.
Oh, that would be nice.
Well, because it's a convenient size for, like, a family I want a cow.
Oh, dear. I think we've started opened up possibilities here.
Yes. There we go. It went out the back door.
Oh, there's
here.
The cow I went. Oh, yes.
Wait, it's surprising what you can find out on the Internet. There's all sorts of good information out there. I ran across another interesting website. It's called wholetree.com. We cut down trees all the time. They tend to be in the way. They grow for years, maybe even hundreds of years. And when a big tree is cut down, we notice it and we miss it.
I find it kind of heartbreaking. We've had a bunch of tree losses recently here.
Yeah,
in town.
And you're driving down the road and, there's a space. There's a space in the sky.
Yeah, that used to be full there.
Yeah, and they trees give us so much and then they're gone. And after those trees are gone, I often think, well, we've missed our opportunity to be the Lorax. No one spoke for that tree.
And you cut it down, you realize a lot of those trees, it'll take 100 years to replace something
Right. But we do use trees. They're wonderful things. We use trees for many different things. We build things. When trees are felled, they're usually cut up into lumber or chipped and reformed and into plywood or other composites to make buildings. There's a lot of new technologies that are using, I suppose, what in the past would be considered not-so-good trees. Use brush and bits and pieces there, cutting them up and reforming them into composites and doing things with it like that. That's one way to build, using the trees that are not quite up to snuff or not wasting so much mainly. But I ran across a really nice project using whole trees. That's W-H-O-L-E, whole trees. Not cutting the trees up at all, but looking at a tree and using the whole thing, taking the bark off, but using that whole thing as a structural member, as pillars, as
so
trusses.
It must be an architect who's looking at the trees like this.
Oh, it's an architect. Yeah. He is, yes. There's a person who actually lives in La Crosse, Wisconsin, of all places. He has his company or thing he's involved in is called Whole Trees Architecture and Structures. His name is Roald Gunderson. And Roald Gunderson says, when properly engineered, whole trees can effectively replace steel and concrete components because you're not cutting up. You're not breaking apart.
They're not stressing it. So
these things
must have really strong. Really good tensile strength.
Really good. And so he's making trusses. He's making support beams just out of knowing how to eyeball and how to use and how to put together whole parts of trees. And the one thing I enjoyed is that his company is using all the ash trees. His company's current projects is using the ash trees that are coming down in Madison, Wisconsin, and building a 5,300 square meter grocery store out of it. So those trees, the artist's conception for how things will be used, you can actually see the trees, the trusses and everything, are actually just peeled logs. But he's found a way to put them together. And he says that...
And they're quite beautiful.
Yes. Compared to milled lumber, as in cut up into boards, whole tree timber can support 50% more weight than the largest piece milled from the tree. Milled lumber moves the concentric rings and attacks the fibers that are holding the tree together. And by leaving the tree whole, they can do amazing things with it. So if you want to find out what's going on with that company, really neat pictures of neat things that they're doing.
And what was the name of the company?
Whole Tree Architecture. So wholetrees.com.
And so you're having a tree house, basically.
Right. he has a good eye for putting together trees and using them as whole things. And the buildings that are come out of it are lovely. And that's one way that they are using the ash trees in town in Wisconsin, in Madison, to make a grocery store. The store is going to be called Festival Foods. It's not built yet, but it's... wait a minute. It says it's scheduled to open in August, so maybe it's almost done. That's good. That's good. That's one thing we can do with trees. Let's think about trees and honor them. Good.
Did you say you have okra coming?
Ah.
What's happening in your garden?
Okra. Okra is blooming. Cucumbers are blooming. I'm waiting for the okra. Right now the okra is about hip high. And when it gets waist high, it's a whole lot easier to pick. So I look forward to that. And the first few blooms are coming. It should be a good okra year because those okra plants are looking great. I know some people don't like okra. I do. So that is coming. They're just starting to set bloom and okra plants.
And when they come, we'll find some pleasing okra recipes for you.
Yes. Actually,
if you don't like it, you should get over it. It tastes fine. It's just a textural.
It is.
And there are ways to kind of work with that slimy quality and make it unctuous.
Yes. I even like to chomp into them raw just for that same reason.
The hairy part?
Yeah. nothing else has that feel in your mouth. I think it's a real, real nice thing. Also, I'm going to mention an herb of the week here, and not because it's an edible herb, but it's an herb, as in it grows. It has flat leaves, herb. And I'm so proud that I was able to identify what this thing was.
It must have some use, Lana.
Oh, we'll think of something to do with it. I have a plant in my flower garden that keeps coming back year after year. It's called clasping dogbane. What a silly name, clasping dogbane.
Sounds like a poem in itself,
doesn't it? It's also related to, there's a couple different dogbanes, but it's also called hemp dogbane. Long, narrow seed pods in the fall, so they spread by seed, but they also spread by runners underneath the ground. So once you have it, you have it. It's tall. It's about, mine about 5 feet tall.
Why do you have it? Oh, because it has flowers, or is it?
I don't know where it came from. So, but luckily it's in my flower garden. I've been pulling it up all over the place. And so it just grows and grows and grows. It's perennial. It grows. It spreads by seeds and rhizomes. They talk about hoeing, pulling, digging it out, but I leave a little patch because it's really pretty. The plant identification book, Rodale's Controlling Weeds Plant Identification Book, says it grows 1 to 2 feet tall. Mine are like 5 feet tall.
Whoa.
But there must be different kinds because the hemp dogbane is very bushy. Mine is very tall. It's very pretty, very, very columnar.
Does it have any usefulness? Like
not that
medicinal?
I have found. Actually, the Indian hemp, the dogbane in general, is it's very fibrous. And I suppose you can make fibrous sort of things.
Oh, you could weave with it if you were so inclined.
You could weave with it, make baskety things out of it, that sort of thing. So look for your dog banes. And the reason it's called clasping dog bane, I happen to know, as opposed to other dog banes, is that the leaves are right up against the stalk and the leaves actually kind of crowd around the stalk. There's no little stem between the leaf where the leaf starts and the stem. That's what I know about it. There you go.
And what color is the flower?
White. It's multi-petaled, multi-headed, and often a little kind of umbral sort of thing that kind of hangs out at the top. It's very, very, very pretty.
Will it grow in my shady spots?
It grows in shady spots. It grows all over.
Oh, I must have some then.
You must. And it's a nice plant. It really is, but it is too much. So there you go, clasping dogbane. We'll talk about the bounty of summer, and that's one of them. Also, I have another thing to report. My Apios americana is growing quite nicely. Yes, it makes out little vines. We talked about Apios americana with Stephen Cannon on our May 26th show. An interesting sort of plant.
And I made a cooking discovery with the Apios.
What?
Steaming it. Instead of baking or sautéing, steaming it made it kind of fluff up and be not so dense and was actually much more interesting to eat.
Oh, that's good because on the bottom of this plant that looks very much like a bean, big, long thing going off in my garden.
And the Apios itself looks like a very dense potato.
Underneath the strange plant, but worth a look. So we've been talking about melons and summer salads today, all sorts of things. I learned about putting salt or not on melons. I think I'll forego the salt.
Well, you should be open-minded and try it.
Okay, I'll try it.
Try it with the lime and the chili and the salt. That's a good way to start.
Okay.
It's very good.
That's good.
And when we get to watermelons, I have been putting for years, what is that black currant liqueur? Cassis.
Oh.
Soaking the watermelons a little bit with the cassis is really lovely.
Oh, see?
And perhaps a sprinkle of black pepper.
Oh, very good. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen with Lana Noctigal.
And Donna Priskintos.
Engineering by Rick Morrison. We've been talking about all sorts of good things to eat.
Summertime.
You've heard music from the Green Linnet 25th Anniversary Collection of good Irish music. And we'll go out with some music from Silly Wizard, wonderful Irish band. Listen to the corn grow. Go to a fair. Go to farmer's markets and pack yourself up a picnic. And forget to take your cell phone on that picnic.
Don't forget to have your BLTs.
Yes. Eat good food. and enjoy life.